Welcome to Behind the Panels, Issue 17, the comic book podcast that's held together by unstable molecules. I'm one of those unstable molecules, Richard Gray.
And I'm your nucleus, David McVeigh. Ooh.
I like that.
Hey, that was pretty cool, wasn't it? year 11 science.
I can't remember that.
Richard, how are you?
I'm excellent, David. How are you?
I'm good. This is a very late night recording.
Well, you know what? I just figured, like, we kind of I get smarter when I get tireder.
Really?
I'm funnier. I've got, like, I just don't care anymore. I'm just going for it.
I think I get funnier because I get stupider.
maybe I get stupider and funnier. Maybe that's what it is.
Maybe. My God, 17 issues.
Yeah, how did that happen?
I don't know. I was actually thinking about it today as I was looking at issue sixes of the New 52, and I thought, issue sixes, that means we've been going for 6 months.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, 17 issues and pretty not much said, really.
No, not really. Our mouths move, but, you know, nothing intelligible comes out.
If this is your first episode, this is pretty much it.
This is what we do. What's on for this week, Richard?
Okay, this week it's Occupy Riverdale.
What?
Pardon? Mark Waid hits the web. You can play with members of the Young Justice. I wish I'd rewritten that.
Yeah, that's not good.
Comic-Con Episode 4, A Fan's Hope, and Warnad to bleach up the big screen, plus a kick-ass pick of the week, Fantastic Four Season 1. But first, our vintage clip of the week.
Oh, hit me with it.
So, Princess, your warnings were useless. Now watch the Fantastic Four struggle in the clutches of Dr. Doom. Observe their puny efforts in their endeavor to avoid the air duct.
Oh, how can anyone be so cruel?
That, my lady, is why the world fears Dr. Doom.
Ben, I'm slipping.
Johnny, do something quick. Get that fan turned off.
Hang on, Sue. I'll try and weld it shut. Here goes.
Look out. Don't get too close.
Johnny, be careful.
Get back. It's too risky.
Sorry, it's your only chance.
You're getting it, Johnny.
Just a few more fireballs. There.
You got it. Just in the nick of time.
Good shooting, Hot Stuff. You can pitch on my team anytime. And speaking of teams, how about our manager explaining this?
Well, Ben, I do have a theory. But first, we'll have to climb up to the eyepiece of my new electronoscope.
Electronoscope?
Now, listen back to that now that you've heard it the first time and try and listen to it with every single line being a double entendre. I'm slipping through to, now you're pitching for the right team.
I like it goes, but all you need is a man, Nerger.
Almost closed it up, Johnny.
Just so, a few more fireballs.
What I actually wanted to find was a clip from Fred and Barney Meet the Thing, which was a short TV series. That clip was actually from the 1967 Fantastic Four animated series. Fred and Barney Meet the Thing was a really interesting animated series because it recast the Thing as a kid with power rings, and when he said this,
"Ding ring, do your thing,"
he turned. He turned into the Thing.
I got to tell you, the 60s, I know that one was a little bit later, but the 60s cartoons, man, those 60s Marvel cartoons, Marvel should be ashamed of themselves for the stuff that they were creating.
One more time.
All right.
Ding, ding, do your thing.
That was the era that gave us this.
Tony Stark makes you feel he's a cool exec with a heart of steel.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yes, but it also gave us this.
What in the name of Robin Hood is going on anyway?
Oh, dearie me. I got to say, I really love the fact that you started doing these vintage clips of the week because some of them are really funny.
Oh, look, you know, there's so much gold out there. I mean, the Fantastic Four one was where it actually started for me because I found that clip of Bill Murray doing Johnny Storm. Which would have been really appropriate this week, but I think that one's great as well. In that same episode, I think Sue was attacked by a giant mouse, and it's hilarious.
Now, the Fantastic Four was an interesting one because half of the episodes had the Human Torch in it, but then they also had a second run. It was like a second season where they took him out and they put a robot in.
Yes.
Because I guess they figured it was too hard to animate the fire or something. Because if you remember, a lot of these Marvel cartoons, they were literally stills that would just move across the screen. They were terribly put together. They were really awful. But they did give us this.
When Captain America throws his mighty shield.
Which is a tune that I hum around the house all day long.
I still love the one, which is the Hulk one.
Oh, yeah. I don't have that on the board now.
Yeah, it's like he's slightly unglamorous.
The ever-loving Hulk. Hulk.
It's my favorite. So, David, apart from listening to vintage clips, what have you been reading this week?
Well, I have been powering through Volume 2 of Powers. Now, I talked about this last week. I said I was moving on with Volume 2. I've actually completed it now. So that's all 30 issues, I think it is. 30, 31 issues, whatever it is. And I was absolutely blown away. It is actually better than Volume 1. But you need Volume 1 because Volume 1 sets up everything that's going to happen in Volume 2. And Volume 2 is a ride. It is, if possible, it's actually harder edged.
Wow.
Yeah, it's they dropped, you know how on our film actually show last week, you managed to drop the C word in there.
That's been commented upon.
Yeah. Well, in Powers Volume 2, they drop that word regularly.
Excellent.
Regularly, all the way through it. And the violence stakes have been raised. And basically, in a nutshell, it revolves around the idea of Powers virus, where you get given this virus and then you become a junkie where you actually need to feed on other powers.
Wow.
And it is, it's brutal. It's a brutal series, and it's really good. It also delves into it. Kind of, I won't give anything away in spoilers, but it does kind of delve into. You know how a lot of the heroes have analogies in the real superhero world. We start delving into the Green Lantern arena. So it's interesting. it's really good and well worth having a look at. And as I said to you last week. Seemingly, Retro Girl is back. So
I'll be curious to see how that happens.
It's interesting. It's very.
Although I have an idea,
and it is actually a throwback way back to Volume 1. So it's very interesting.
So it's a series that rewards you sticking with it.
Absolutely, I've actually started reading Volume 3 now, which is only 8 issues in, and Volume 3 is the current volume. And they've started a new storyline, of course, and it's still strong. Strong stuff.
I'll get back to it.
It's a real. I was talking to my lovely wife, and I said, I think this is actually fast becoming my favorite comic book of all time. And she said, "What, better than Walking Dead?" But I said, "Yeah, actually, yeah. it's really sharp. You know, it's almost like Michael Bendis. Brian Michael Bendis. It's almost like he writes all the other stuff, like the Avengers and the Spider-Mans and everything else, and then gets out his inner demons in Powers.
Okay,
because that's
I suppose it's always been his sort of it has been his sort of independent outlet. So.
Absolutely, and I think this is where he goes. All the things I can't do in those other books, here they are.
No, look, I mean, and you saw bits of that when he was doing Alias and so forth.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, Alias, that's a good point. Alias is also high on my list of really good books. I think when Bendis is on A-game, he is untouchable. But he's got to be on A-game. The problem is he's so prolific that there's always going to be poor stuff out there.
That's right.
Other thing I thought I'd talk about very quickly before you jump in is I actually watched the pilot episode of Comic Book Men.
How was that? I've heard mixed results about that.
I actually really liked it. I haven't watched the second episode yet. But for those who don't know what it is, Kevin Smith and his cronies who work at his comic book store, The Secret Stash in New Jersey. And what they've done is they put together this show. It's an hour long. And basically it's two shows that are kind of intercut together. So one show is Kevin Smith and the boys from the Secret Stash sitting around microphones as if they're recording their podcast. And they're just chit-chatting about comic books and what it's like at the shop and so forth. And that's just really funny. It's really off the cuff. And then that's intercut with life in the comic book store. And people coming in and wanting to trade stuff and their antics that they get up to in the shop. And Kevin Smith's not in any of those parts because obviously he doesn't work there anymore. But I thought it was actually a really entertaining show. I think if you're not a comic book fan, there's nothing in this for you. But if you are a geek and you do like that kind of weird counterculture, collectibles and comic books, and you want to sit around and talk about, you know, things that are unrelated to the real world in any way, shape, or form, then this can be actually very entertaining.
It's much like this show, David.
Much like this show, indeed. So, Richard, what have you been watching?
Well, look, it's something we were talking about before the show, David. Like, I've had a lot of films to watch this week for my other gig at The Real Bits, but I did manage to get through, obviously, this week's pick, and I've been reading a bit of a mishmash of the new 52, which, as you were saying, because there's 52 titles a month, I've completely lost track of what I've been reading. I know I've been reading a lot of super books lately, and I'm really getting into the super world, but it's kind of, I almost have to read it in stages. Like, you know, this week I'll just read a whole bunch of super books together and just keep that world in my mind, and next week I'll read all the Green Lantern books because I can just keep all that world in my mind together, you know? It's really difficult to kind of keep track of what seems like, you know, three or four separate different continuities across 52 books every month at the moment.
I agree.
Read something recently. There's a little panel that they splashed up of the latest issue of Dark Knight, and I think all the Bat books are set in the old continuity for the most part.
Right.
Because they threw up a thing where it said something where Bane makes a reference to having broken the Bat's back. So obviously that's still in continuity from the old Nightfall books.
When is that issue coming out? Is that a six or?
I think that's a six, so it should be out, if not this week, next week.
The Dark Knight is this week.
This week, well, there you go.
Well, that'll be very interesting to have a look at.
He's knee deep in owls in all the other books.
And that owl storyline is fantastic. I actually read six on Batman, which is the continuing owl storyline, and it was actually the conclusion to that Maze issue.
Oh, yeah. Which fabulous issue.
Yeah, and the conclusion is very interesting, too. So it's well worth having a look at that as well. Issue six is they're a blur, but I got to tell you, the one thing that I am actually getting a little tired of, and it's a real shame, but I actually think I'm kind of over Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman has never been a book that I've been able to stay with for more than three or four issues.
See, it's interesting. I really, really liked that J. Michael Straczynski run that was just before the 52, the one where they changed her costume and everything. It was a 13-issue run, and it was really interesting because it was this whole reboot of Wonder Woman, or was it? And there was this underlying thing that maybe there was something going on, and it wasn't really what we thought it was.
Right.
And when we came to that conclusion and we got that ending of that, I thought, this is really cool. And that came up, that ended the month before the new 52 started. And so, of course, you immediately think, now we've got a starting point for the new 52 Wonder Woman, and they didn't follow it. And that really disappointed me that they went off in this completely different tangent with Wonder Woman. And
it's a shame.
The six issues that I've read so far, it's not going anywhere. And that's the problem. I'm six issues in, and it's like, this isn't my Wonder Woman. She's not doing anything, you know? So I'm a little disappointed with Wonder Woman at the moment.
Yeah, there's a few titles I'm wondering where the direction's going to end up. But, look, you know, I'm sticking with it. I mean, I'm 52 issues deep times six, so...
Exactly. We can't give up now.
We have to know. How will I be prepared for the next reboot if I don't keep reading?
Absolutely. I also read the most recent Daredevil from that new Marvel reboot. That's actually pretty good too. That's leading up to the crossover at the moment. They're getting closer and closer to that. There's another one in that series. Oh, I read the latest Avenging Spider-Man.
Oh, right.
And
yes.
That was pretty solid.
That's with Hawkeye, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's actually a really good issue. It's kind of a standalone.
Okay.
And it's just him and Hawkeye out on patrol, and they don't really like each other.
Does anybody like Spider-Man?
No, I don't think they do. But Spider-Man wants to, you know, quip with his bad guys, and he wants to have fun, and he wants to kind of, you know, do this patrol because Captain America told him to go do the patrol, and he's taking it seriously. And all Hawkeye wants to do is practice.
Right.
So he's everywhere he goes, he's shooting arrows into things. it's actually pretty good. The Avenging Spider-Man, solid series so far.
Yeah, no, I'm really liking it. I was really surprised with that one.
Mm-hmm.
All right, David, I think it's time for some comic news.
Comic news? That would mean I have to play this.
What a scoop!
It's so joyful.
Boy, was that loud. But yes, it is joyful.
It's not so loud here. It's very loud on Skype.
Well, David, in this first story...
Archie and Veronica blush.
Because... because, well, Riverdale's gotten a bit political.
What is going on in Archie world?
Well, in this episode, we find out that Mr. Weatherby's been molesting Archie. No, sorry. In this issue, we
this
find
is the issue
out
where we find out that Archie wants to marry Jughead, right?
And pretty much,
they can't
yeah
in their state, and they have to move states, right? No, no.
there's a basically we all know about the Occupy movements that are
absolutely
happening around the world. But apparently, in a boldly relevant move, according to Newsarama, Archie Comics is doing a story touching on the ongoing Occupy movement entitled Occupy Riverdale.
Oh, come on!
It says, though a date or issue hasn't been announced for the story yet, it'll be written by Archie PR executive Alex Segura, who also wrote the four-part, wait for it, Archie Meets Kiss story that wraps up this week. The artist from cartoonist Giselle Legace, who's worked for Archie before, and draws and writes co-writes comics that gleefully not safe for work webcomic Menage R3. I want to, yeah, definitely. I think that's the right combination for Archie. I think I might get back into reading Archie comics.
Well, especially we also had that crossover that we've actually talked about doing on the show, which was Archie Meets the Punisher as well. So I think Archie's the place to be at the moment. Although I'm looking at this picture in this article, Archie doesn't look the way it used to look.
No, it's very different. This
it's
one
a
apparently
very different piece of artwork.
It's a working class Archie is once again torn between Betty and Veronica. Except this time, Betty represents the 99%, and Veronica, along with Mr. Lodge and someone that may be a Reggie in a fedora, is firmly the 1% of camp.
And so, in this picture, Jughead looks like a stoner.
Yeah, absolutely.
Look at that guy.
I know, he's awesome. He's like that little. He's just got his kind of casual little crown hat he's got going.
And his eyes are all half squinty.
It's like, dude, Archie, choose me, man.
I still don't know if it's enough to get me back to Archie Comics.
But I'll look. I might read that issue.
Look, if that issue comes out, I'll read that one. Absolutely.
Absolutely. So whenever that comes, it's got no release date. So.
Of course not.
So when we find out more about it, we'll let you know.
Absolutely. All right. So from Archie to
Mark Waid.
Mark Waid. Okay. So what's Mark Waid got going?
Mark Waid, we dealt with quite a few issues back.
We dealt with him. We put him away.
We dealt with him. He's done. That's it. We don't have to worry anymore. No, I think if you recall way back in issue 13.
Way back
in issue 13. It was four issues ago. We dealt with Mark Waid for Daredevil and his current run of Daredevil.
Of course.
And he's done a lot of good work lately, but he's launching a number of webcomics this summer. And so he's going to be launching exclusive webcomics, and he's been experimenting with the medium to create works that can go beyond what the printed page can offer, according to Bleeding Cool.
Right. What does he mean by that?
Now, he writes, "As I proceed, my artists and I are constantly learning more about what does and doesn't work with digital. Yet without resorting to the crutch of cheap, limited animation, we're still able to suggest movement by altering the art between panels on the page turn. That happens when the reader taps on the left or the right edge of the screen. We can break long captions or art elements into pieces that seem to drop in as the pages are turned, and we're only just beginning to learn."
Isn't this what Comixology is already doing?
Yeah, in a way. But just have a look at there's a video on the link that we've got in our show notes for Luther, which is a demo of what's happening with that.
Right.
See things going on. It does have a similar element of what's happening already with Comixology, but this is actually doing a little bit more where it's you've got a panel, and the panel will have an element, have all the pictures in it. And
oh,
then,
actually, yeah, I see that, where a person will suddenly appear in the panel.
A person will suddenly appear, or the captions will appear one by one. So the actual panel itself is dynamic and not just moving from one panel to the next like Comixology does. So I kind of it's a different way of doing it, but I think, as Mark Waid says, we're only just at the cusp of what we can do with digital comics.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that could be actually a very interesting technology. And if it works, you can imagine it being adopted by other people.
Mm. And maybe, reworking some older comics to bring in those sort of elements. Because we've been experimenting with webcomics for ages, and like things like Watchmen came out.
Oh, the motion comics. Comic. Yeah, all the motion
comics, sorry. Yeah. Watchmen came out as a motion comic, and they released a whole lot of those older comics, those motion comics. So, you know, I think this will be an interesting project and definitely something that we'll have a look at later.
I actually really enjoyed the Watchmen motion comic.
It was pretty good, actually.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. The only thing that was a little off-putting on it was when the guy was putting on the girl voices.
Yeah.
That didn't quite work. They should have brought in another actress, I think. But anyway.
Yeah.
All right. So, the new era of motion comics.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm excited by it because I think, you know, look, since I've started reading comics on my iPad, I've actually, well, one, found a use for my iPad, but two, it's sort of given me a new lease on comics because I can carry around 52 comics a month if I want to, you know, and I can carry them. So whenever I get a spare moment, I can just pull out my iPad and just read a couple more issues.
Absolutely. I carry around in my iPad at any given time probably about 400 comics.
Well, no, I'm sort of getting there at that point now too. We've been doing this show for 6 months. I've got a pretty good collection building up.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so Young Justice, tell me about this.
Hey, look, Young Justice is a TV series which you probably know about. It's the Young Justice. It's based on the Young Justice DC thing for DC Warner Brothers Animation. Young Justice takes the characters Robin, Aqualad, Kid Flash, Superboy, Miss Martian, and Artemis, who's kind of like a junior female version of Green Arrow.
So the Giants, in other words.
Yeah, absolutely. pitches them against villains, of course.
Right.
DC have announced that they're bringing out a game for PlayStation, Xbox, Microsoft Systems, Nintendo Wii, and DS early next year.
Interesting. I wonder what sort of game it's going to end up being.
Well, it doesn't. I'm not sure if it really gets into it here, but it's setting an original storyline between the seasons 1 and 2 of the television series. And you get to play your favorite characters, and there'll be cameo appearances by popular Justice League heroes and villains, and it includes online multiplayer as well as local multiplayer mode.
Cool. Now, the TV series. Do you know anything about the TV series? I know it's Warner Brothers, but is it Bruce Timm?
It's not Bruce Timm directly, I don't think. I've not actually seen a lot of episodes of it because I don't think...
It starts airing March 3rd, apparently.
Yeah, well, it's probably into its third season. Now,
right, okay. So. Oh, yeah, new episodes begin airing, right.
Yeah, and it's... you know, it's interesting because it is actually altering some of the characters from what we know. I mean, the main ones that are in there are characters like, you know, Kid Flash and Superboy and Miss Martian and so forth. But Artemis is actually a character who's not, who does appear in the comics, but they've actually made her a female Green Arrow instead of the original character that she was in the comics.
Oh, okay. So they've replaced Speedy, basically.
Yeah, but again, they've made it a woman. So I don't know. I'm still a bit conflicted about that because it's a female Green Arrow, David.
Relax, Richard. Relax.
And I'm excited. I'm allowed to be attracted to Green Arrow.
They're young, remember? They're young.
Oh, that's true. They're young. It doesn't say how young.
Oh, man. All right, we got to move off that story quick.
Right, okay. Moving swiftly along.
We've got some film news.
We do.
I'm very excited about this.
Yeah, well, this is a story we covered partly already over on the film show film, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But Morgan Spurlock, the documentarian who's made movies like Super Size Me and Pom Wonderful Presents The Greatest Movie Ever Sold, which you got to interview him for.
I was about to say, and there's a wonderful interview with Morgan Spurlock over at geekactually.com if you want to go hear that.
It's a great interview, actually, yeah. No, it was really good. It was a shame I didn't get to go along to that one, actually. But it was he's made a great couple of documentary films, but his latest one is Going for Her Own Hearts. It's Comic-Con Episode 4, A Fan's Hope, and it's looking at the Comic-Con convention. And a new trailer and poster got released this week. Now, the poster's awesome. It looks like a comic book cover with all these people, all the people that feature in it turn up as superheroes. So that's really, really cool. And you can check that out on my site. I've got it up there at the moment. But I've also got the trailer up there as well, and I've pulled out a little clip from it here, which is quite funny.
Let's hear
Let's hear a few names that you might be familiar with.
Before you actually play that, we should actually mention as well that it's not only Morgan Spurlock. This one's actually produced by Joss Whedon.
So
it's got some real pedigree behind this one. I've been looking forward to this. I heard about this for the first time when they first announced they were going to make it last year. And I actually went, oh, man, I want to see this.
Well, it's got that pedigree behind it, behind the camera, but some of the people who are on camera that you'll hear and hear fairly familiar voices as well.
Fire it up.
Sit in my chair. Let me make you look dead. Buckets off, everybody.
I'll never forget the first time I took a peek next to a stormtrooper and a Klingon. That could only happen at Comic-Con.
Okay, we're good.
All right, guys.
I was looking out my hotel room window, and I saw three Ninja Turtles really impatiently checking their watches.
Where? Excuse me. You have to check that in.
In the mind of every comic book fiend, Comic-Con is just the answer to all your prayers. It's like heaven, in as much as, like they always tell you, when you go to heaven, everything you've ever lost is going to come back to you.
You want to get in already?
My wife's not too ecstatic about this whole toy collecting thing.
Let's go.
But I will not leave that con unless I have those figures.
That's Paul!
You can always tell Kevin Smith's voice because he always says Comic-Con.
Comic-Con, yeah. the first two, of course, were Eli Roth and Seth Rogen.
Yep. You know Seth Rogen's voice anywhere.
You did some of the people that will be appearing in this, but it is really about the fans, which is an interesting group. And I think I've mentioned this before. I recently watched a documentary and spoke to the director of The People versus George Lucas, which is a very particular set of fans, being Star Wars fans. And this is kind of like it's those fans and those type of fans for every franchise imaginable in one place is Comic-Con.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm fascinated. I've never been to a Comic-Con. I've been to a few local comic conventions, like Supernova is the biggest one we have here in Australia, but we will be launching our own version of Comic-Con in Adelaide later this year.
I would love to go to that. I just don't know whether it would have the same impact.
It's probably not going to. I mean, the thing about the American Comic-Con is its size. I mean, we're talking America's got hundreds and hundreds of millions of people. So it's kind of the creme de la creme of geek. It's the geek mecca.
It is.
And it's because it's an American convention. All the big companies go there, and it's become the biggest advertising showboat, you know, you can possibly imagine.
And it's become so big now that there's now New York Comic-Con, which is at a different time, because they're trying to get the overflow. And apparently,
absolutely,
New York Comic Con debuted, and it was already huge as soon as it debuted. So I don't think it really worked. So I think they just exploded another one on the other coast. So,
oh, look, you know, I don't think there's any slowing down. Now that, particularly given that the studios know that they can go and advertise, they can play 30 seconds of footage, and that, you know, thousands of people will line up to see 30 seconds of footage, you know, a few days before the rest of the world.
That's true. Although, it's interestingly enough, it has actually backfired on them as well. If you remember, Scott Pilgrim actually completely backfired on them. They showed it. People lined up. They actually showed the whole film for free. They showed the entire film, and everybody went nuts, and everybody cheered, and then the film bombed. You know, and it's like, wow, that was a really interesting event that took place. It's like it was pitched perfect at everybody who would be the target audience.
Yeah.
And died, you know, but that's, they loved it at Comic-Con, you know.
I'm constantly surprised about the failure of Scott Pilgrim, because it was, you know, such a wonderful film, I thought. But
great book,
you know. Who knows? But yeah, Comic-Con. I can't wait to see what's happening with that. The other bit of film news that came out this week is, it wasn't a huge one at all, but it came out literally today. Warner Brothers announced they're adapting the manga Bleach.
I've never heard of Bleach.
Now, Bleach is a very, very, very long-running comic that's been appearing in Weekly Shonen Jump, one of the big boys' manga that's out in Japan.
Okay.
Bleach has been it's not only been a long running manga series, it's also been a long running anime series, and it's also had a couple of films. I think about three or four of those made for the big screen. But now Warner Brothers has said it has plans to adapt the manga series into a live action feature, according to Variety.
Uh-huh.
Peter Segal, who recently directed Get Smart, is apparently going to produce the film and potentially direct, while Dan Mazou, who wrote Wrath of the Titans, is attached to draft the screenplay.
We've got some real amazing talent behind the camera there, don't we?
Doesn't fill me with confidence. The comic is actually quite good. And the basic story behind it is really good. It's about this guy who has a run-in with this woman who tracks evil spirits called Hollows.
Mm-hmm.
And she transfers her powers to this guy. And he takes up the mantle of what they call a soul reaper.
Right.
And that's it strands her in the mortal world, and he kind of is able to straddle both worlds. And it's kind of that really cool supernatural warrior concept to it, mixed with some samurai stuff. You know, it's quite cool.
It's got the shades of Ghost Rider in there, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But it's. You know, it's a really cool concept. It works really well as a manga, works really well as an anime, and the anime films they've done have actually been quite big and quite epic. They've been a little patchy. So, I don't know. This just seems to be Warner. Is it Warner that's doing Akira as well?
I think so, yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know what Warner's playing at.
Peter Segal and Dan Mazou. Oh, my God.
I know. What the hell? What it's kind of like to get these properties and say, what can we throw at them to make the fans hate us?
That's almost like saying, we're going to do Akira and Happy Gilmore is going to produce it.
Well, almost. But, I mean, Christ, they had Zac Efron to star in Akira at one point.
At one point.
Who knows what's happening with Akira now?
Akira has Zac Efron starring in it this week. Oh, dearie me. Well, look, we'll wait to see if this actually happens.
Absolutely. Now, before we move on to the pick of the week, David, I think it's time we remind readers.
Well, stop. Stop.
Wait. I said before we move on.
No. I was actually trying to move something out of the way, and it actually clicked on. It clicked the button instead of moving it out of the way. So I apologize for that. I preempted us.
You're always going off too soon.
That's what my wife says. Not really. I'm just pushing the boundaries of our non-explicit tag to see how far we can go. always testing the boundaries, you know.
We should remind listeners that last week we launched a giveaway. Yes. Thanks to Hopscotch Thanks to Hopscotch Entertainment, we have 4 Blu-ray copies to give away of The Walking Dead Season 1 for Australian listeners only. These are encoded for Region B, so unfortunately they won't work in your players overseas. And also, we're really cheap on postage. The more important factor. But we still have 4 copies to give away of this thing. We've had some great answers so far. We gave you the question last week, and we'll repeat it again this week. The question is, if you were a zombie, who would you bite? Now, we've had some great responses, everything from my brother to, you know, a lot of people mentioned former Australian Prime Minister Paul Rudd, Kevin Rudd.
Kevin?
I've got Paul Rudd on the brain this week. Imagine if Paul Rudd had been our Prime Minister. former Australian Prime Minister Kevin Rudd and to current Australian Prime Minister Julia Gillard. These all came out last week, which was interesting because we've had a leadership challenge involving both of those people in the last couple of days.
I know, there's a lot of biting going on in Canberra right now.
Absolutely, but we've had all sorts of things. A lot of people seem to want to bite celebrities, particularly supermodels, for various reasons, which I don't know if I can get into on a non-explicit rated show.
It depends on what kind of bite we're talking about. No, look, we're not going there.
But you've got your question. If you were a zombie, who would you bite? Head on over to therealbits.com. There in the featured section, you will find the form to fill out where you can enter this competition and for your chance to win a Blu-ray copy of The Walking Dead, the complete Season 1. Now, we'll read out some of those, our favorite answers, on air next week.
Yep.
Where we'll announce the winner. Well, it actually closes by the time this one comes out next week, so we may not read some of the stuff until the following week. So if you want to find out who wins, you may have to listen to the next 2 shows.
That's right. So this competition closes on the 4th, is that right?
That's right. Yeah. So actually, by the time the next show comes out, by the time issue 18 comes out of this show, we'll be drawing it won't be able to announce the winners until issue 19. So listen in for that. All you have to do once you've filled out the form is subscribe to this show, which you're already doing because you're listening to this, and give this episode or the previous episode a listen to find out what the question is. So good luck with that, and we look forward to seeing even more entries.
And I say it again, where's my copy?
David, I'm working on it.
All right, now I'm going to play this.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
You know, one day we're going to do a really, really dramatic book and that clip's not going to make any sense at all. Oh, wait, we've already done that.
But this week...
Bing ring, do your thing!
All right.
Right, this week.
This week.
It's not a dramatic... Look, after Ratcatcher and Sam and Max, we've had our non-capes book, so it's time to get back to probably Marvel's first superhero family, which is the Fantastic Four.
Absolutely.
So we chose to do Marvel's kind of retro, not so much reboot, but their kind of year one thing called Fantastic Four Season 1.
It's kind of like a reimagining of their origin.
Yeah, pretty much. Mm. I mean, it's an interesting book. It's written by Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa, and it's with art by David Marquez. And it's available now as a trade paperback or a hardcover book, a single volume. But I think it was released originally as 4 issues. Yeah. And this book is, as you said, it's split into 4 chapters covering the origins of the Fantastic Four, kind of in a way we've never seen before, introducing some new information. And I'll say up front, not entirely satisfied with the way this was done.
No, and I agree with you. I think it's beautifully, beautifully drawn. I mean, it's just crisp, clean, beautiful artwork. Not as stylized as stuff like Sandman and stuff like that we've done in the past. It's very, very straightforward, very, very clean lines, but it's beautiful. I mean, it's almost shades of almost a little bit too digital and clean. You know what I mean? But it's beautiful. It's really, really pretty to look at. I said when I read it, it felt just a little lightweight. It doesn't have any depth. And okay, Fantastic Four has always been kind of the family book of Marvel. Yeah. So, but even with that being said, there should still be some stakes.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you. Now, look, the first part of this book starts in a very familiar place. It starts with the 4 people. Mm-hmm. All coming from, we're introduced to them one by one. We're introduced with Sue sitting around with her girlfriends talking, wondering about, you know, when Reed's basically going to commit.
Yeah, exactly.
Reed, we're introduced to as a brilliant scientist who's working with a character named Alyssa, who's another brilliant scientist, who's working with him. And we get the sense that they've either had a relationship or always been on the cusp of one.
I actually got the impression that she always wanted the relationship and he was oblivious.
Perhaps, but I also, there's a few hints that they may have, you know, stayed back late one night.
Oh, really?
I get the impression, but I could be reading too much into it. But yes, there's definitely some tension going on between those two. Ben Grimm's is sort of a washed up boxer type character who used to be a bit of a thug.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny Storm is a mechanic. No, he's not a mechanic at all. He introduced as a mechanic, but he's actually
a
model for that takes his shirt off a lot, really.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, when you got six pack like that, why wouldn't you?
He looks pretty good.
He does.
But then they all go and basically it's the typical origin story. Reed Richards rushes through his experiment, takes the 4 of them into space where they're bombarded with cosmic rays, and they're all imbued with fantastic powers. And become ultimately the Fantastic Four.
And we should always note that their powers directly relate to their personalities.
Yes,
so,
that's right.
So the Fantastic Four were always, that Sue always felt that she was invisible and she was never noticed. So, of course, she manifests the power to turn invisible. Johnny Storm was always a hothead. So he, of course, turned into the Human Torch. Ben Grimm was, I don't know, a brickhead. Why was he there? Because he was just muscle, right?
He was just the muscle.
He was just the muscle, so he turned into the thing. And Reed never felt he could do enough. So he was given basically powers that he could literally be everywhere at once.
He could stretch himself.
He could stretch himself out and, you know, be in two places at the same time, basically. You know what I mean?
So that's right. They introduced it. Now, when they introduced these characters as the Fantastic Four, one of the things you commented to me, David, was that I always remember there being a lot more angst, particularly on the part of Ben Grimm, about his lot in life, and also a lot more guilt by Reed about what he'd done to his three best friends and lovers. Here he comes off as very much as a man with Asperger's or he's autistic or something. he really comes off as not having a lot of human emotion.
No, and it actually made me wonder what she saw in him.
Yeah, and because she does, and spoiler for later in the series, and spoilers as always, but not really much of a spoiler for an origin story that's now, you know, several decades
old. 70 years old, 60 years old, my God.
At least 50, 60 years old. Yeah. So it's she actually makes this declaration about how Reed's the only person she's ever loved. And you think, why?
Yeah, exactly. That was kind of the issue. In fact, I've kind of had that issue with the Fantastic Four forever, but this comic in particular, which is I just never understood their relationship.
I mean, it's meant to be the most stable relationship in all of the Marvel U.
Hmm.
And you know, look, I like the basic idea of the Fan Four, and I really like these four characters who come together. But when you look at something like The Incredibles,
yep,
where they kind of do a Fantastic Four style story, but they're actually a family.
Yeah, and there's emotions in that family, you know?
There's emotion, exactly. And they have their problems. Like, you know, when we meet The Incredibles, he's hiding from her the fact that he's secretly going off and doing a bit of superhero work on the side, and they both feel as though they're not getting the most out of their relationship.
Hmm.
And that's something you never really get much in the Fantastic Four comics. They try and do that a little bit in this. They try and sort of indicate that Sue's not happy, that she's jealous of this Alyssa character, that she's attracted to Namor the Submariner when he's introduced.
We'll come back to him.
We'll come back to him later. Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, so a few different character differences. I guess the first major plot introduction that we introduce comes in the second part of the book, which is the introduction of the classic villain.
The Mole Man.
The Mole Man.
Hmm. Who we've actually just recently talked about from Avenging Spider-Man.
That's right.
Hmm.
Now, he's introduced here as, well, first of all, he's not introduced. This giant monster Godzilla-type thing is attacking New York.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the first time the four of them have to pull together and do something to fight the evil as a team.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they meet this thing. They do that very quickly. But what's really interesting is that while they're off fighting these beasts, Sue's quietly talking to the Mole Man and finding out his real name.
And finding out that, you know, he's not so bad.
He's not so bad. He's just lived underground for a long time, and he just really wants someone to talk to that's his equal. And really, that's resolved fairly quickly.
Hmm.
And then he's able to calm the beasts down himself, and they all go off, and he's offered a job with Reed Richards, you know, in the Baxter Building.
Yeah, which is not the origins of the Mole Man that I remember.
No, it's not what I remember either. In fact, there's a few origins I don't remember in here either. I do actually like the way his character's written, and I think he's one of the stronger elements of this season one.
Except that I actually found myself going, okay, so when does it turn?
And I was waiting for that too, and I suspect that if we saw I think if we saw a few more issues beyond this, he probably would have.
Hmm.
Which actually brings me to one of the other issues that I have with this season one, but we'll get to that in a minute, the way it kind of just ends and then moves on to a where are they now. But I did like the way his character was drawn when he was introduced, both figuratively and literally. I like the design of him with the kind of the way they've drawn the glasses, and he's kind of unshaven, and he's just this dude who lives underground.
Disheveled dude. One thing we should go back to really quickly, throughout the entire book, in fact, I actually really do like the way that they relate to Reed. Because he is a man who stretches, I love the fact that they're all like, oh my God, it's so disgusting. All the way through the book, nobody wants to touch him. Nobody wants to look at him. And they're all going, can you just like go back to normal?
I love that one scene where he's Sue's walked in on him and he's got like a giant head.
Yes.
And he says, oh, I was just experimenting to see what happened if I increased my... Oh, never mind. And he shrinks it. Yeah, here it is. Susan, come in. I was just thinking about you. And he's got this giant head. An experiment. I wondered if increasing the size of my cerebellum would... Oh, never mind.
So I do love the fact that out of... Because, I mean, let's face it. It is kind of gross when he stretches out. You know what I mean? Yeah. Especially some of the shapes he goes into. And it's like, I love the fact that even Sue's like, I don't even know if I want to touch him anymore. You know?
Now, when they're finally introduced as a team, and they change their name from the Fearsome Four to the Fantastic Four,
yes.
You see this guy that looks like a bit of a hobo in the crowd going, the Human Torch, alive?
Mm.
And he gets all squinty, so you know he's evil.
Oh, and he has a big scraggly beard.
And he has a big scraggly beard and a beanie. What I like is like they introduce like that the Fantastic Four have fans almost immediately. Like this geek runs up to Sue and says, Invisible Woman, can I have your autograph to Maven, please? And I'm like, I can't believe it's you. I can't believe it's you. And then she says, oh, I hope there isn't disappearing ink in this pen. And her friend's like, wow, you got shtick already. And so it's got little moments like that. But then we find out that the disheveled man that they've spoken to is actually none other than Namor the Submariner. And he's having flashbacks to a time when he was fighting the original Human Torch. Now, this is all from the golden age of Marvel superheroes, which they refer to here.
And this is also something I don't remember, because I actually remember, and this isn't my era of comics, but just my understanding my Marvel history. And please, if anybody can correct me on this, please write in, comics@geekactually.com. But I actually always was under the impression that Submariner and Human Torch were heroes together during the Captain America of the World War II era. And I don't remember him hating the Human Torch. I don't know what that's all about. Anyway, so if you do know something about that, please write to us. I'd love to know.
Now, I think he was one of the top three. They were one of the top three characters together. But apparently, in his first appearance, Namor was originally when Namor was introduced, he was an enemy of America. And Everett's anti-hero would eventually battle Carl Burgos's android superhero, the Human Torch.
Oh, well, there you go.
That's what they're referring to there. Hang on. But then Namor, after the US entered the Second World War, Namor ended up allying himself with the Torch and the Allies against Adolf Hitler.
Of course, because Adolf Hitler was the bad guy.
Yeah. he was a bigger bad guy than Namor the Submariner.
Yeah.
Now, it's interesting because then as soon as he hits the water, he remembers... you know, who he is, and because Namor seems to have lost his memory, and so he hears the water, he remembers who he is and starts plotting against the monkeys above ground. I love the way that he storms through and just mutters to himself and then calls all humans monkeys. I really love that.
I love what is that when he walks into the museum that's showing off the riches of Atlantis, and that woman goes, gracious, that man is practically in the nude. And the other girl goes, I am so moving to New York.
So around this time, too, they've worked out a way to turn Ben Grimm back to normal.
Yeah.
And while they're off doing all sorts of things, Johnny Storm is using his powers to pick up women. Namor's raising a Leviathan from the deep. And they've all just as Ben gets turned back to normal, they realize this thing's attacking. So the Fantastic Four are called together, but of course they're only the Fantastic Three at this point because Ben's just a human again.
Hmm. Now this is all shades of the movie as well.
Yeah, absolutely, and very much reminiscent of the movie. Except in the movie, it was correct me if I'm wrong. It was
Doom.
Actually, Doom who gave him the option to go back. And Doom, we should say, is not very present in this book at all.
No, I was actually a little bit surprised about that as well, because Doom has always been so synonymous with the Fantastic Four that I thought that if you're going to do a season one, why wouldn't you bring Doom back into it?
Absolutely. But then again, this is meant to be their earliest adventures, and you know, they're meant to be jumping on points, so I'm not sure about that. But then, look, you know, ultimately they battle the Submariner, but... And Ben Grimm decides that he needs to turn back into the Thing to be part of the not only be part of the team, but he realizes that his job, his whole life, has been to be by Reed's side as his best friend and as his protector.
Hmm.
Because he was always the egghead and and Ben was always the muscle that looked out for him. He's like, kind of like a big brother role.
Yeah. And I love the fact that when he does the turn back, it's the Mole Man that actually helps him.
Yes. And which is, again, you're waiting for something to happen there, which never does.
Yeah, you're waiting for the ulterior motive for doing it. Absolutely. But it's like, no, there isn't one. You know, it's like,
he's just a nice guy.
He's just like, hey, I'm here.
You know? I like it with the lights out, but otherwise,
I just felt that the entire Mole Man subplot, sub character, was just completely unnecessary in this book.
Well, and this again, they defeat Namor fairly quickly, and not through a fair bit of talking. And they managed to get his horn, and then Ben Grimm rides the monster that they'd beaten earlier in the book to fight off against Namor's Leviathan in a big monster showdown. Eventually, wins, and they all sit around talking about it.
Can we point out that one of the things that actually kind of defeats Namor as well is the fact that he's just seduced by the fact that Sue Storm is a hottie.
There's also that, but then later on, when they've captured him, and he's all like, "You wanted me." I said it. You wanted me. And she's like, you know what? No, I don't think so. I've always got a thing for Reed, which confuses me because you really do actually think that there's a moment there between them.
Yeah.
You never get that kind of chemistry, at least in this book, between Sue and Reed.
No. And that's the thing. You're never quite sure why they're together in this. There is actually more chemistry and a much bigger connection between Reed and Alyssa.
Absolutely, and I think that was something they were trying to set up, but in this abbreviated format, you don't really get that sense. In fact, there's more chemistry between Ben and Johnny Storm than there is between the two. I've always liked the relationship between Human Torch and the Thing, because they've always had that kind of love-hate brother thing.
Well, yeah, it's a sibling relationship, and they're not even related, but it's so big brother, little brother.
Absolutely, but and you know they always have each other's back, but they're constantly fighting. But you don't get enough of that in here. You know, they're never. And I think the problem with this book is that the Fantastic Four are never together in the same scene enough. They're kind of told the story from four different perspectives, and that might have been the point. But to the joy of this book has always been those four characters together.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're working together. I mean, that's why they're the Fantastic Four.
Fantastic Four, absolutely. They're not the Fantastic One plus three or two and two.
Exactly.
There are a few disappointing things. Now, the end of this book kind of does a where are they now? And at least this is probably in the collected edition.
The collected, yeah.
The way they did it. And they sort of give the episode, which is from issue 570. And there we get a bit more of a modern story where he's fighting. Now, what's the name of the character?
Give me a second. What is his name again?
The Wizard. The Wizard.
The Wizard. The Wizard. Thank you. Yeah, he's a mental in the mental stakes. He's an equal to Reed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's managed to clone himself, so there's many of him.
Well, this is an interesting story because it is obviously set many years later, and Sue's even more of a hottie, despite the fact that she's had several kids.
Yeah, she's gone through motherhood well.
She's gone through motherhood. She's still fit into that spandex.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah,
I've got to say, though, and look, you know, don't take this the wrong way, but her breasts are even perkier.
Post-childbirth, absolutely. I'd also like to point out that Reed has been hitting the gym.
Reed's been hitting the gym, but he's got a bit of a Silver Fox thing going for him.
Yeah, well, the Silver Fox thing's very classic Reed, but wow, those are some guns on him.
He's some massive guns. He's almost as big as Johnny Storm.
But then again, I guess if you're like elastic, you can make himself look any way you like.
That's true. He's just probably, he's pumped himself up.
Today, I feel like looking like Schwarzenegger.
Tomorrow, I'll look more like Sue.
So look, this is an interesting story, but the only problem that I had with this story was, of course, it's not complete because
it's just a teaser.
It's an issue, and you need to go and find the rest of the issues to find out what happened because it goes into this very interesting place where Reed is basically travels interdimensionally to talk to other versions of himself from other worlds.
And I really love that stuff. I've always loved the kind of multiple worlds thing.
Oh, me too. And I think it's fascinating because they took this to the nth degree by taking him to a special place where it's literally dozens of him.
It's a
council of Reeds where they are all different kinds of Reeds with all different kinds of powers and everything else. And they're basically trying to perfect the world.
Mm.
And making it reach to its full potential, and they're asking, you know, our Earth's Reed whether he would like to join their council. Absolutely. And that's where they leave it, and you go, I want more of that.
You know? Yeah, well, that was issue 570, and we're up to the early 600s now, so we'd have to go back sometime in the last couple of years to find out.
The only problem is you got to get through all that future Foundation stuff first.
Yeah, that's right. So we'll maybe go back and have a look at that soon. But I like, you know, Fantastic Four has always been an interesting one for me. This wasn't the jumping on point that I really wanted it to be. But you know, I've never been a huge fan of the Fantastic Four, I got to say, but I've liked the idea of them.
I got to say that in the Stealth Marvel reboot that we've been talking about, 600 is kind of like the Fantastic Four's reboot. It's kind of the jumping on point now. With Storm coming back into it and all this sort of stuff. And I've been actually having a look at some of those. They're actually, it's not a bad point to jump in.
Okay.
So well, 600 might be a place to join. 600 might be the place to join in. But there's no mention of this council, so I don't know if this is actually continuing or anything. So who knows?
Right, yeah. Well, look, I mean, we'll check it out soon enough. But
And David, very quickly before we go, because I know we're running out of time, but if you want to see a really, really interesting turn in Reed, you need to go back and read Marvel's Civil War. Because Civil War actually breaks the family up. She leaves.
Okay.
Because she can't stand what he's doing, and he's all basically gone into this weird righteous mode where he's basically taking the side of, you know, we should be enforcing everything like this, and she basically says we can't do this anymore, and she walks out, she takes the kids.
Wow.
And so it's a really different Fantastic Four, and it's a really disturbed and what's the word I'm looking for? And dramatic read, because it's a very different world for them. So that the Civil War took the Fantastic Four to some really dark places.
No, it's one of those things I've always wanted to read, but it's such a massive undertaking.
At 160 something issues, yeah, it is. It's a big undertaking, but it's well worth it.
We've got a weekly show. I can't read that yet.
Look, even Nicholas has read Civil War. Come on.
All right. Well, if Nicholas has read it, I should get around to it.
Yeah, you should. All right. That I'm going to say that it's okay. It's very pretty. It's a very pretty book, and it's okay, but just be prepared that it's a very light read.
And there are better Fantastic Four origin stories, I think.
Yes, I agree.
So, look, yeah, exactly. It was a good experiment, but not one of my favorite stories either.
No, it's not one of my favorite books of this last 17 issues.
So, David, next week we're getting away from capes again.
We're going to Mars.
We're going to Mars. John Carter's coming out early next month, and we're looking at Warlords of Mars, Fall of Barsoom, which is one of the official prequel comics.
Fantastic. So this is a four-issue miniseries, I believe it is? Four or five?
That's right. Four.
Or five. Yeah. So it's a miniseries. We're going to read this, and we're going to do this next week. I think this could be fun. There's a lot of John Carters. We had to pick one. So this was kind of
a Princess of Mars one. There's a whole bunch.
Yeah. So we just thought we'd pull this one. This one's complete. It actually has finished its run now, so we thought this is a good one to do.
Excellent.
So so John Carter, Warlords of Mars, Fall of Barsoom. Let's do it. Let's go to Mars. Get your ass to Mars.
Ass to Mars. So where can we find you, David?
You can find me at geekactually.com. Everything I do is linked into that site, but you can also find me on Twitter at David McVeigh, all one word.
And you can find me, well, right here, obviously, but you can also find me on therealbits.com, that's the RELBits.com, or on Twitter at DVDBits.
Fantastic. And Richard?
It's really dark in here.
Yes, it is.
All right, David, as always, it's been a pleasure.
It has been a pleasure, and we'll do this all again next week.
Next week, we'll be covering John Carter, Warlords of Mars, Fall of Barsoom. We'll Absolutely. See you all then.
And everybody, get your entries in for that Walking Dead thing.
Don't miss out on that one.
Absolutely. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.